Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches, and that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on Facebook at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now, Jim Andrews continues his study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. We continue our exposition of the book of Genesis. We've arrived at chapter 20. This chapter is a sort of deja vu all over again narrative in the life of Abraham. But like all these narratives, it underscores spiritual lessons for all of us. Let me just mention several. We all have certain personal weaknesses, and because of those, you and I have a tendency to repeat the same blunders. That is why, secondly, the Lord will keep challenging us at those points, or He will throw down the gauntlet until we get it. Thirdly, fear is a great enemy of faith. So, we must be careful to recognize that fact, and with the help, the assistance of God's grace, challenge those fears. Fourthly, the faith of the greatest of God's saints is like Swiss cheese. Abraham's no exception. Overall, solid, but here and there, holes in the general spiritual picture. 5. But for the grace of God, we would all fail. And finally, integrity before God attracts His mercy. I didn't say God owes mercy. The very nature of mercy says that it's not owed. But integrity before God, which is something He creates, engenders His mercy. In the case of Abraham, this is a case of weakness, not wickedness, that we're about to look at. Now, Abraham was only too well acquainted with the rules of the road in ancient times. Remember, he was still an alien. He was a rich one, but nevertheless, Abraham was landless and more exposed to the impetuousness of a royal power adjacent to him than a rival monarch would have been. Abraham had something that other men wanted, and he knew it. In this case, a very attractive wife. It seems that he and Sarah had a standard, or a boilerplate agreement, we might say. That agreement was whenever the two of them were confronted by the covetousness of figures more powerful than Abraham, their standard stratagem to protect Abraham, the lesser of two evils, would be, God forbid, the sacrificing of her purity for his life. That's kind of ugly. Now, Abraham journeyed from there toward the land of the Negev, the south, and we read that he settled between Kadesh and Shur. Then he sojourned in Gerar. And there Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, "She is my sister." So Abimelech, the king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream of the night, and he said to him, "Behold, you're a dead man, because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is married." Now Abimelech had not come near her, and he said, this is all happening in a dream, very real to him, "Lord, will thou slay a nation, even though blameless? Did not he himself," meaning Abraham, "say to me, 'She is my sister,' and she herself said it, 'He is my brother'?" "In the integrity of my heart," Abimelech says, "and the innocence of my hands, I have done this." Then God said to him, in a dream we are reminded, "Yes, I know that in the integrity of your heart you have done this. And I, the Lord, also have kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you or allow you to touch her. There's the sovereignty of God in play. Now, therefore, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet, a spokesman for God. And he will pray for you, and you will live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours. In Abraham's nomadic habits, in a land that still does not belong to him, and perhaps too because of the needs of his flocks and herds, Abraham is moving from the area around Hebron, where there were the iconic trees of Mamre the Amorite. He moves further south and to the east, to an area then called the Negev, which I said meant the south. He moved to a geographical site between Kadesh and Shur. Whatever impelled his move, he actually settled in Gerar. That was a city-state whose king was called Abimelech. Abimelech is an inherited royal title like Pharaoh. It's not a personal name. It was passed down from ruler to ruler. As Abraham had done in Egypt, he again, in this case, tells not Pharaoh this time, but Abimelech, that Sarah is his sister, which was half true. He just conveniently omits telling him the most important fact, that Sarah was also his wife. So, Abimelech, true to expected form in those days, attaches her, this very beautiful woman, presumably Abraham's sister, to his harem. At this point, God quickly and providentially intervenes. He scares Abimelech, the king of Gerar, half to death. He does this by means of a dream on a night before Abimelech had had opportunity to violate Sarah. In the dream, he warned Abimelech, who did not know the Lord. Nevertheless, this was all very real to him. You are as good as dead because of the woman you have taken. She's a married woman. Well, in verses 4 and 5, that news shook Abimelech to his foundations. Apparently, in some manner, we are told that Abimelech knew that the God he was dealing with was the Lord, Yahweh of Abram. He pleads his innocence in his dream in his appropriation of Sarah. He justly pointed the finger at Abraham and Sarah's mutual deception. Lord, I did this with a clear conscience and clean hands. And, as we said, the protest happened to be true. And in verse 6, the Lord God acknowledges the fact, reminding you that all of this transpired in a dream. And in his dream, he informs Abimelech for that very reason. Because he had done it with a clear conscience and clean hands, the Lord warned him, strongly enough to get his attention, even though a dream, warned him in a timely fashion that in his mercy, God himself had sovereignly prevented the king from sinning against him. That is precisely why the Lord has intervened to prevent the king from consummating an illegal marriage with Sarah. So in verse 7, Abimelech is instructed to promptly return Sarah, lest there be awful consequences. Otherwise, Abimelech is warned he will die and his family with him. Now here is another example of God fulfilling his covenant of blessing to Abraham, which of course includes protecting him and his. This does not mean when God blesses his elect that he excuses their sins. It does not mean that they have carte blanche to do whatever they will. God will deal with us in all of those matters. However, in this case, Abraham is his chosen one, and God was going to bless Abraham, and he was going to protect him also from his own folly in this case. Well, in the morning, Abimelech awakens, shaken by the dream. He swiftly complies with God's demand. After consulting with and informing all of his officials about his dream pertaining to Abraham and the previous night. Well, since this dream seemed to have a divine origin, they too were all shook up. So in verse 9, Abimelech summons Abraham. He justly administers a royal rebuke for Abraham's misrepresentation of the facts and all the harm that Abraham's self-protective stratagem could have brought on the kingdom of Gerar. He wants to know what he did to deserve such treatment. Of course, none. This was uncalled for, certainly was. "Why would you do such a thing?" Abimelech asked in verse 10. For a friend of God, it's always a bad thing, and I think I mentioned this back when we were dealing with the same sort of incident in the case of Pharaoh. It's a bad thing, bad optics, when our actions and our behaviors draw a just reproof for our sorry ethics. And in this case, worse, putting others in unnecessary danger of some kind. We've got to worry about the substance of our actions and how they reflect badly upon God. We've also got to worry about the bad things that we might do, how they put others in peril or jeopardy. Abraham was self-protective. He was a good man. He was a man of God. His heart was in the right place, but he was still a man of flesh, and fear got in the way of faith, as it had done before. Well, in verse 11, Abraham explains himself, "Because I thought surely there is no fear of God in this place. I just know it. They will kill me because of my wife." Then he adds, in verse 12, to mitigate his bad behavior, "Besides," he tells Abimelech, "the truth is she actually is my sister. She's the daughter of my father, Terah. She just doesn't happen to be the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. And here's the deal, Abimelech, your majesty. It came about when God caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said to her, 'This is the kindness which you shall show me everywhere we go,' always being aware that he's got in his entourage a very beautiful wife, and he's going to be in the midst of strangers and aliens, some of whom may be hostile, some of whom will not care that she is his wife. So you will say, 'He is my brother,' and I will tell them, 'You are my sister.' So that's why I did what I did." It wasn't terribly compelling to Abimelech, considering all that might have happened had he added her to his harem and then violated her before this dream occurred. Abraham, we thought, should have learned the folly of this covenant he made with his wife in Egypt. But here, almost unaccountably, they repeat themselves. Except for the mercy of God, it could have ended very badly for Abraham and for Sarah. It just points out something about us all, and that was something that I remarked on in the introduction, that we fallen human beings, though believers in God, trusters in Christ, we do have a tendency in some of our patterns to repeat the old habits. And as I say, the Lord will keep throwing down the gauntlet until finally we get it right. I'm sure Abraham did after this. Well, in verses 14 through 16, in returning Sarah's honor, Abimelech gave Abraham a ton of gifts. I mean, they were really spooked, he and all of his officials, by this God of Abraham. He showed more fear of God than a lot of us show. He said, "Man, we've got to honor this God. This is a heavy-duty thing that happened to me." Abraham is attached to that God. Abraham knows that God, and we do not want to offend that God. So Abimelech did what he could. He wasn't a believer in God, but he did respect him as Abraham's God, and he gave Abraham a ton of gifts in terms of sheep, cattle, male and female slaves, and in terms of money. He gave Abraham 1,000 shekels of silver as a sign of Sarah's vindication to all and sundry. So, through the grace and mercy of God, Abraham comes away materially enriched, but sharply and embarrassingly rebuked. God did not have to beat the stuffings out of a man like Abraham. Abraham was a man who had a sensitive heart toward God, He was driven by fear. Wise words go deep into a heart of a man who loves and knows God. And he was embarrassed to the core, and Abimelech's rebuke, I'm sure this time, found its mark. But God was merciful, and God promised to bless Abraham, and Abraham comes away from this fiasco materially blessed, because Abimelech had a desire to appease the indignation of Abraham's God, a God that Abimelech had little more than a pagan conception of. Well, in verses 17 and 18 we read, "And Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maids, so that they bore children because he had closed their wombs. For the Lord had closed fast all the wombs of the household of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife." God certifies Abraham as his spokesman. And this is a left-handed kind of mercy for Abimelech. In other words, he earmarks Abraham, in the eyes of Abimelech, a Gentile, as a sort of priest. When he counsels Abimelech, when Abimelech returns Sarah to Abraham, to invite Abraham to intercede for him before God, that any punishment might be lifted. Now, what's significant about that, or at least one thing that is very significant about that, is that counsel Abimelech takes immediately. And Abraham intercedes as God's prophet, as God's spokesman for the king. And he specifically asks that the wombs of Abimelech's wife and female slaves might again be fertile so that they could bear children. That was an ability that God had temporarily suspended until things were right. Now, by requiring this Philistine king to turn to Abraham for prayer, here's the mercy. God made it clear that no one has throne rights except those who are accepted by God. Secondly, by so designating Abraham as his prophet or spokesman, what God does is mercifully establish a human witness to himself as the true God. So now the question was, would Abimelech seek the God of Abraham? Would he seek to know him personally? Would he seek to have a relationship with him? Or would he just want to appease him and get this God off his back and to relieve his fears without coming to faith? Well, so far as we know, it never occurred to Abimelech or to his house to draw any closer to the true and living God. So far as we know, this interaction never moved Abimelech away from his pagan conceptions. The human heart is blind. It cannot see unless God opens the eyes of the heart and allows sinners to see. So far as we know, they remained stuck, their buttons stuck, in their pagan conceptions, even though God had used this event to shine light on himself in the eyes of Abimelech and to get his attention. And he got his attention in terms of fear, real fear, not only him, but his counselors. And he was moving and shaking to try to appease this God. But that did not bring him to a point of faith, unfortunately, and did not bring him to a point where this Gentile sought to serve the living God. Human beings are so prone to take the common grace and mercies of God and run. That phrase, common grace, just means that abundant grace God sheds upon all mankind, like the sunshine and the rain, the fertility and the fecundity of the earth. All of the good things that God shares with everybody that are witnesses and testimonies to the fact that I am God. Human beings, I say, are so prone to take that common grace and the mercies of God, the awesome things that we see of God every day, and run. All of nature, both on earth and in the firmament, displays his handiwork. And people will stand in awe of it and say, "Isn't that wonderful?" Just recently, my wife and I return from our vacation. This time we went several places, but we went to the Grand Canyon, among other national parks. I had been there, but it had been maybe 30 years. My wife never had, so we wanted to make that part of our travel itinerary. Well, Aussie was in awe, absolutely in awe. I was, too, after 30 years, but she had never seen it, as I said. And it was marvelous. And we both thought, seeing all these other tourists around us with their children, looking out and seeing the sights and commenting on how transcendent it was, how majestic, how spectacular the Grand Canyon was, so far above anything that human art might produce or even think of. Wow. But never, with all those tourists on those buses taking us from site to site, never did I hear one inkling of any praise to God. People were all caught up with the creation of God, but nobody was caught up with the God of creation. That was terrible. I remember when we were, I believe it was in Bryce Canyon, and that in itself had its own majesty. And here we were going on these buses, getting on, getting off, picking up another bus. But on this one bus, there were a couple of young ladies, and they were young ladies, right across from us. And everybody was going ooh and aah as they were looking at everything, including us. But these two young ladies were unfortunately obviously lesbian, and they were wrapped around each other like two mating snakes. It almost made you want to throw up. Throw up for one thing, because they couldn't even see the glory of God around them. They weren't interested in anything. You wondered, why in the world are they even on the trip? It was stunning. It was stupid. And it was depressing to see all of this. Well, that's the way it is with our world today. It can't see. It just can't see and just can't understand the glory of God that's all around us. Abimelech had a dream, and it was some dream, and it was real, but it was a dream, not just a real dream, but God was really talking to him. In those days, pagans had no doubt about the supernatural, unlike today, where many try to deny it. They live in a closed mental universe, and only the things are real that we can touch and feel and taste, that sort of thing. Now, he knew it was real. He didn't know this God. He responded in fear to this God, but not in faith. He just didn't get there. Even though God extended a gracious and merciful hand, he used the wrong of Abraham to turn it for good, and used what Abraham did to make Abraham, to Abimelech, a prophet, not a religious man merely, but a prophet, a spokesman for his God. And at the end of the day, that accomplished nothing. And so it is today. The grace of God, the mercy of God, reaches out to sinners all over the world. Here he saves a life by inches. Whoo, everybody. Oh, thank God. But then, do they serve God? No. They go their own way. Here somebody is sick, deeply ill. Never listened to God, but now they're ready to listen. Here comes the preacher, and they listen to, thank you, preacher. They get well. Do they serve God? No. They don't serve God. Here somebody is blessed by the hand of God with riches. They thank themselves. They do not thank God. And so it is with the world that we live in, blind and deaf and dumb. Well, dear friends, thank you for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. And our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program is ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.